This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Harvard University's first Black president and a second woman president, Claudine Gay, was forced to resign in the wake of allegations that she engaged first in anti-Semitism and then in plagiarism. But journalist Erin Haynes writes that the real issue was about allowing a Black woman to be in a position of power. Erin Haynes is editor-at-large of The 19th and an award-winning journalist with nearly two decades of experience. She was previously a national writer on race for the Associated Press. She's also worked at the LA Times and the Washington Post. And her latest story is entitled Claudine Gay's Resignation at Harvard Proves Black Women's Leadership is Still Political. Welcome to the program, Erin.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be with you.
So first, let's talk about how the situation with Claudine Gay came about, right? It started out with her congressional testimony around free speech on the Harvard University campus, and she was basically assailed for not standing up enough to anti-Semitism. And then she, after that didn't stick, it seemed as though the right then went after her to see if there was another way to remove her. And you point out in your story in The 19th that this was a campaign that did begin on the right. So tell me about that aspect of it, because I don't think it's gotten enough coverage.
Sure. So, I mean, you did have conservatives, specifically conservative activists who, you know, were raising concerns about anti-Semitism on college campuses. And so Dr. Gay, now the former president of Harvard University, was one of three at the time college presidents that had been called into Congress to really answer for these allegations college leadership really failing to address anti-Semitism on college campuses. And of course, this is in the wake of the ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas that has been going on for several months now. And so, you know, there was an exchange that went viral with Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York, who is a Harvard alum, was asking Dr. Gay specifically about, you know, what the consequences would be if anti-Semitic rhetoric was part of, you know, would be in violation of Harvard's kind of standards around bullying. And you know, Dr. Gay's response was, it depends on the context, which, you know, was a moment again that went viral. But Dr. Gay was able to, you know, withstand that moment. The president of Penn actually resigned in the wake of her congressional testimony. And the president of MIT actually, her resignation was called for as well in the wake of her testimony. But the only president who's really had to, you know, step down as a result of that congressional testimony was President McGill at Penn. And so then fast forward, you know, after that controversy, you know, amid that conversation, there were allegations of plagiarism that came to Dr. Gay. This was from her scholarly work earlier in her career before she was president of Harvard University. The college did launch its own investigation. Dr. Gay encouraged that these allegations be looked into and any kind of oversights or errors rectified in any kind of scholarly work that she had. But this conversation, you know, really was the one that did not go away. And by the end of the year, it was looking pretty untenable that Dr. Gay was going to be able to stay in her leadership position. And so then at the beginning of this month, you had her stepping down over these allegations and really it looking like it was going to be very difficult for her to continue to lead after being at the helm of Harvard, the historic position, first African-American, only the second woman to lead Harvard University in almost 400 years, stepping down after only 6 months.
And her tenure was the shortest of all Harvard presidents as well. You point out in the story that you wrote in The 19th that you quoted this right-wing figure who said very openly on Twitter, quote, "We launched the Claudine Gay plagiarism story from the right. The next step is to smuggle it into the media apparatus of the left, legitimizing the narrative to center left actors who have the power to topple her, then squeeze." This is seems to be a very insidious kind of attempt. Can you expand a little bit more on what this means to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a playbook that was in plain sight. I mean, literally, you have this conservative activist who is on social media saying the very thing that he planned to do to try to oust Dr. Gay from her post as president of Harvard University. And the reason that he wanted to do that, he was very explicit. You know, he said, you know, that DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in America's institutions really have no place in our society as far as he is concerned. He was helped by, you know, a very rich donor who also, you know, said that he saw many problems with DEI efforts, most of which really kind of came into the spotlight nationally for a lot of people in the wake of the racial reckoning of 2020. But really, there has been an effort. We've seen this. I mean, it was certainly not limited to the affirmative action decision in the Supreme Court. You have conservatives who are looking to kind of dismantle any kind of programs that seem to give not even preferential treatment, but that seek to kind of level the playing field for folks who have been historically marginalized, who have been historically discriminated against, who have been historically at a disadvantage, you know, when it comes to, certain opportunities in this country. They are saying now that in fact they are the victims of discrimination, that they are now on the side of folks who are not getting these opportunities, and so. Really kind of casting themselves as victims of civil rights violations and saying that DEI is actually not a solution to racism, but is perpetuating racism. Hmm.
The op-ed that Claudine Gay wrote in the New York Times after, you know, just to explain basically what happened to her, I want to just quote from it. She said, "It is not lost on me that I make an ideal canvas for projecting every anxiety about the generational and demographic changes unfolding on American campuses, a Black woman selected to lead a storied institution." And this echoes what you write about in the 19th, that basically this was a political ouster, right? It really didn't have anything to do with plagiarism or anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I mean, look, race and gender really are the main targets of a lot of these kinds of efforts, this type of movement that we see not only in the attack on these institutions, but in our politics, in our democracy. And that is because, you know, weaponizing race, weaponizing gender is something that is effective, unfortunately, still in our society. And so, Dr. Gay being, elevated to this historic role, really almost from the moment that happened, you know, she did become a target, like I said, only 6 months in this role, because what she symbolized, you know, her leadership was something that many people saw as part of, a broader problem that they are seeking to address, that they are seeking to roll back in kind of the wake of the racial progress that folks have been attempting to make since that racial reckoning of 2020.
One of the things that the right-wing figure, I don't want to give him more publicity, so I won't tell his name, who said, who laid out the playbook that you quoted, one of the points that jumped out at me was that the starting point was unleash the story and then leave it to what he called the center-left actors who have the power to topple her. And it feels like we see this over and over again, right? When we saw Donald Trump, for example, talking about his openly racist agenda, and you saw those institutions in the news media that should have called him out overtly, but who basically let it slide, who should have said that he was racist, but let it slide. Over and over again, it seems as though we have the right setting the agenda And then those who claim the mantle of liberalism kind of enabling them by not standing up strongly enough against racism and wanting so hard to prove prove the right wing wrong that they end up validating them. And I'm wondering if you think that that's a really important thing to consider, that the defenders of Claudine Gay, there weren't enough defenders of Claudine Gay among those who should have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we are kind of in this highly politicized, highly racialized climate in our country where we are also not necessarily operating with a shared set of facts, right? On an agreed upon kind of set of values or norms. And so that means that there is certainly opportunity for those who are not interested in a freer or fairer or more equal country to kind of exploit that. I think that that is something that people who do want to kind of bring about that kind of society don't always have an answer for.
You write that the same credentials and career that qualified Claudine Gay to lead also made her a target. Does this year that we are just beginning with this, you know, very high stakes election in 11 months ahead of us, do you expect to see the playbook against Claudine Gay and others like her to be multiplied, to be used in the lead up to the election and beyond?
Oh, absolutely. Because what we know is that is a playbook that still works on some segment of the population, including some segment of the electorate. Listen, I wrote in 2020, I had a prediction for journalism that you know, race and gender weren't just going to be a storyline of that election, they were going to be the storyline. And I think that probably is going to be the case headed into this year, because, you know, certainly you've got the unfinished business of the racial reckoning, which kind of really unleashed, you know, this backlash in the opposite direction that we are now confronting. And you also have certainly so many issues around gender that remain relevant and that are galvanizing people as well. And so when you, you know, add those two things together, I think it has the potential to be a very potent political motivator, you know, on both sides headed into November.
I'm wondering if you've seen John McWhirter's op-ed in the New York Times. Claudine Gay was not driven out because she is Black. The New York Times seems to love to publish his op-eds on every matter that's serious on racial justice. And he seems to be this sort of convenient poster child for the right, even though he may or may not be right wing, but he often tends to echo their talking points. And as a Black man, he is a convenient person for people to point to on the right to say, look, he said it's not about race. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think to your point, you know, he certainly is somebody who speaks to these issues and certainly, you know, has an opposing view. But I think, you know, we have examples, you know, to look at. I think Black women certainly knew what they were looking at when they saw what happened to Dr. Gay, who, you know, had impeccable credentials, at least before you know, these conservative activists decided to go after her. I mean, she was good enough to become the president of Harvard. She was certainly lauded in that moment when her presidency was announced. You know, the attempt to kind of discredit, devalue the contributions of Black women is something that is absolutely a phenomenon in our politics and in our society right now. And at the same time, it is nothing new.
And I'm wondering if you also think that because Claudine Gay started out as not vociferously enough for her critics defending against anti-Semitism, that this is also an issue about what one can and cannot say on university campuses about Palestine. We see what seems to be a fairly stark divide racially in this country, where Black intellectuals and academics and intellectuals of color in general have tended to be a lot more outspoken in their support for Palestinian rights and speaking out against genocide than white academics. And there seems to be this racial divide that in a way Claudine Gay sort of symbolized where Palestine was concerned, even if she may not have said anything necessarily strictly around supporting Palestinian rights.
Well, Sonali, I certainly take your point, but I think I would again point out that you know, Dr. McGill did end up having to step down from her post at Penn over her response
Right, and she's a white academic
during that hearing, and she is a white woman, right? So I just want to say that, but no, I mean, I think you know what I wrote about in my column was that, you know, Dr. Gay's ouster really was not about anti-Semitism or her alleged plagiarism. It was about some folks who frankly did not think that she deserved to be where she was, and so wanted to remove her from that place,
right.
and were successful ultimately in doing so.
Finally, Aaron, what do you think it's going to take to push back against these attacks for the future Claudine Gays, for other Black women who are in positions of leadership, especially in academia and elsewhere? If the right has a playbook on offensive, going on the offensive, what is the playbook? What is the defensive playbook to their attacks?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I don't know that these attacks are something that the rest of us have any control over, or something that even we can expect to go away. But I think that neither can you expect Black women to continue to stop, you know, succeeding and breaking barriers and kind of entering these spaces where they have not previously been. And so I think, you know, certainly as we continue to normalize Black women's leadership, there may be more of the country that gets used to what that looks like, what that feels like. But there will probably also be people who continue to feel threatened by that, and who will respond in the ways that we have seen them respond to Dr. Gay and others.
Right. And I should also mention that Bill Ackman, the other person who has gone after Claudine Gay, it turns out his wife, Neri Oxman, who's a former MIT professor, apparently plagiarized part of her MIT doctoral dissertation. And so there's double standards to go all around. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Aaron. How can people subscribe to your newsletter, The Amendment, where you publish the story that we've just been discussing?
Thanks so much for asking, Sonali. So folks can go to 19th198news.org, and they can sign up for my newsletter. It's called The Amendment, and it publishes every other Wednesday. That will come to your inbox for free if you sign up today.
And we'll post a link to that as well. Thank you so much, Aaron, and good luck to you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
My guest has been Aaron Haynes, editor-at-large of The 19th and an award-winning journalist with nearly two decades of experience. She has written a story at The 19th that we've just been discussing. It's titled, Claudine Gay's Resignation at Harvard Proves Black Women's Leadership is Still Political. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.